all unique God of all, the Lord of Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad. We call upon your name this evening as we come to break our fast.
According to the teachings of Islam, Ramadan commemorates the revelation of God's word in the Holy Quran to the Prophet Muhammad. The word has become the foundation for one of the world's great religions.
You said recently in your old church, our national leaders are sending U.S. soldiers on a task that is from God. Are we fighting a holy war?
You know, I don't know if that was my exact quote.
Exact words.
As again we say, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. Give me a break. Something happened on the road to Damascus. John fell off his horse, but he got back up on the same horse.
Well, from where I'm sitting in the studio, I can see a number of these books sitting on my shelf, even though my books are completely disorganized, piled up against one another. I can see Friedrich Nietzsche. I can see Machiavelli's The Prince. I can see a number of books that have some really bad ideas in them. And when I say bad ideas, I just don't mean illogical or ill-conceived. I mean evil ideas in them. What should we do with books that have so profoundly and wrongly influenced the world around us? We're going to be talking about famous books and bad ideas here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Monday, September the 22nd. You can join us for the next 2 hours of the program. Our call in number 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or you can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. We're going to be talking with Dr. Benjamin Weicker. He's written a book called 10 Books That Screwed Up the World. It's a great list, by the way. Rebecca Curtis will join us after that for the second part of this first hour. How girls dress. Do girls dress, not all, but do many girls dress purposely to make it difficult for young men to keep their eyes off of them? Then Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us to talk about a UN resolution that would ban the defamation of religion. It impinges upon speech. We'll see what he thinks about it a little later in the program. Then Pastor Peter joins us to pick up where we left off in our Apostles' Creed series. We're still in God the Son because the big part of the middle part of that Apostles' Creed is all about God the Son. We'll pick up where we left off with Pastor Peter Bender of the Concordia Catechetical Academy in the last part of Issues Etc. Our call in number 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or email us talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Benjamin Weicker is a senior fellow at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology and for the Discovery Institute, and he's author of the new book, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World. Dr. Weicker, welcome to Issues Etc.
I am honored to be here.
You say that of all these bad books, I'm sure there are more than just the ones you've listed, the best remedy to the ideas and the books that hold them is to read these books. Why?
Yeah, that might be a little ironic because the response that I usually get, given the title of the book, is, oh, then you must warm your house with the continual bonfires of books that you want burnt. And that's not what the point of my argument in 10 Books That Screwed Up the World is at all. It's this, that these books have distorted our way of viewing human nature, every aspect of it, from art to social policy to morality. Yet, we, even though these ideas form the way we view the world, we don't any longer understand them as ideas. They're just part of the air we breathe. And what reading the books does, in which these bad ideas started, is that it awakens us to a clear account of the argument where we can really see it, really understand it, and reject it or accept it based upon that clear presentation. And of course, since I'm arguing that these books distorted the right way of seeing things, you know, that we should reject their argument.
Someone might say, look, this is really not that there are bad ideas or dangerous ideas in there. There are no dangerous ideas. These are just ideas that were abused by others. How do you respond?
Yeah. That is so common. You know, another one is the books don't kill people. You know, people kill people. And I guess, you know, well, that's true. The book, Marx's Communist Manifesto, never leaped off a shelf and attacked and killed anyone. But when those ideas that were in the Communist Manifesto were taken seriously and followed, then you have millions and millions of corpses piling up in the 20th century. And so to say that ideas don't have consequences is simply to be ignorant of the way that ideas inform the way that people act, change the way they act, and set them on disastrous courses.
If you had to choose one among all of the bad ideas and the bad books that contain them, which would be the worst?
Well, that's a tough one. In fact, it was even tough to get it down to 10. And so, actually, I have 15 in here as a subtitle and 5 books that didn't help shows. But, it, you know, there's so many different ways to damage human beings. I mentioned Marx's Communist Manifesto. We think there's a body count of 100 million people killed. That's not the only way that you can screw things up. One of the ones I like to point out, which is surprising and is important given the year 2009, which is the 200th anniversary of Charles Darwin's birth, is Charles Darwin's The Descent of Man has been extremely damaging because in it, Darwin very clearly and cogently applies a theory of evolution to human nature, and the result is that human beings should be treated eugenically. That is, the best should be bred, and the imperfect and the unfit should be bred out. That's a horribly damaging idea, and not just for what occurred under Nazi Germany. It still goes on today with genetic manipulation and in-womb genetic testing and the elimination of the so-called imperfect, both unborn and also through infanticide.
How do you respond to someone who says, look, the bad ideas have been tried and largely they have failed. We've seen communism tried and there are still vestiges of it. In fact, a very big vestige over there in China.
Yes.
But everybody can have now a clear-eyed view of the track record. And so these books and these ideas are no longer dangerous. We all know better now.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought because, you know, as you say, Marxism is a good example. Oh, well, gosh, you know, that's over with. Who's a Marxist except maybe a few really old university professors and those folks in China? Well, again, it's hard to know what to say to someone who can say, you know, blithely that we should not have that we should have allowed just to show whether a thesis was worthy or not 100 million people killed at the hands of Marxist ideology. So what it should warn us about is the seriousness of ideas and the importance of discerning which ones are really toxic or not, because these ideas still inform the way we act. And that's why on the list of 10 books that screwed up the world, I included those books which may have been written a century, 2 centuries, 3 centuries ago, even 5 centuries ago, but still inform quite pervasively our view of human nature. So these aren't just old books. These are old books that have influenced the West for centuries and still do.
You say that a common theme or connection between a lot of these books with bad ideas is atheism.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, it's important to see that as a common strand. That's one of the reasons that I set up the 10 books that screwed up the world historically, so we could see the way that ideas built. And Machiavelli's The Prince is the first book that I deal with. And in that book, you really have the first powerfully argued modern atheistic manual, which argues that because God doesn't exist, human beings, especially human princes and kings, are freed from moral restrictions to do what will keep them in power. Well, that idea has had political consequences right from the 1500s down to the present day. You know, that kind of notion of power politics. And the argument is a very simple argument. If God doesn't exist, then there are no moral restraints on my action. Therefore, as a leader of a country, I can do whatever I want to stay in power.
What's insidious about The Prince is that its author advocates the appearance of virtue and honor and even of religion as a means to an end, but merely the appearance, because you couldn't hold to those things and do what he advises you to do.
Exactly right. Exactly right. I mean, you don't have to look to somebody like Stalin, who did indeed use Machiavelli's a prince as the only devious user of Machiavellian's ideas. The even worse, as you're pointing out, is the person who's been taught by Machiavelli himself to appear to be religious, even while he's doing the most foul deeds behind the scenes, and in a lot of cases blaming them on other people, because that person realizes you can manipulate others by religion in order to gain power. And that's something we, you know, I suggest, especially reading Machiavelli's The Prince in this election year for that very reason.
We're talking with Dr. Benjamin Weickery, Senior Fellow at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology and for the Discovery Institute, author of the new book, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World and 5 Others That Didn't Help. We're talking about famous books and bad ideas. Another 15 minutes with Dr. Weickery on the other side of this break. 1-877-623-MYIE. We're coming to you live this Monday, September the 22nd. Feel free to give us a call. 1-877-623-MYIE, or email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. I'm Todd Wilkins. Stay tuned. More bad books and bad ideas after this. On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Craig Batty, Jane Seibolt, George DeBram, Marku Holko, Marilyn Singletary, Roger, Matthew Hetty, Randy Sandveit, and Pastor Eric Rotman. Thanks for your support.
618-223-8384. It's the new phone number for the Issues Etc. listener comment line. 618-223-8384. Leery about calling a live radio talk show? Want to remain anonymous? Leave your recorded question or comment on the Issues Etc. comment line. 618-223-8384. The good, the bad, the ugly. We're big boys. We can take it. 618-223-8384.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran Church, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click Sponsors. The Issues Etc. 300.
Joseph Stalin, Allen, Carl, Nasser, and Prokofiev, Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Bloc, Roy Cohn, Juan Perón, Toscanini, Dacron.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about famous books and bad ideas. Coming to you live this Monday, September the 22nd, 1-877-623-MYIE, or talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Benjamin Weickery, author of the book, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World and 5 Others That Didn't Help, is our guest. You talked before about Darwin, and many people would probably expect you to pick Origin of Species as the worst, but you say it's Descent of Man from Darwin's pen. Why?
Yes, and incidentally, this is one book in particular that should be on every college reading list and is not, because in it you've got quite clearly Darwin as the father, the founding father of the modern eugenics movement, and saying things that are quite shocking about, you know, how awful it is to have the unfit live on in our society and the object of charity kept alive to ruin, you know, the good, the fit in the species by breeding. You know, it's shocking, but it's Darwin, and he meant what he said. And in doing so, in strictly applying the origin of species argument to human nature, he opened up this notion that since human beings are just one more kind of animal, and then you should be able to breed for desired characteristics and breed out undesirable characteristics. And for Darwin, this included, shockingly, that the movement of evolution forward would entail the destruction of the lesser races. Now, those are his terms, and he included, and I'm again using his terms, a direct quote, the Negro and the Australian, which for him were very close to the baboon and gorilla in the evolutionary spectrum. Awful speech. You know, you can't imagine this coming out of anyone's mouth. It came out of Charles Darwin's mouth. People need to read that in order to assess the legacy of Charles Darwin. And that includes, what about the origin of species, the arguments there? Well, they need to be assessed on their own scientific merit, but part of that, are the question of assessment, is what are the moral implications, and what did Darwin himself say about what evolutionary theory means for the future manipulation of human beings?
Without Descent of Man, would there have been a Mein Kampf?
That's a good question, because evolution was already in the air, as I've argued in another book called Moral Darwinism. Darwin did not at all discover evolutionary theory as sort of the scientific myth makers would have us believe. It was in the air. It's an ancient pagan notion. It comes from a Greek and Roman philosopher. So who knows whether it would have. However, that having been said, certainly Darwin's Descent of Man paved the way for Hitler's Mein Kampf, and that's one of the reasons that I chose Hitler's Mein Kampf as one of the 10 books that screwed up the world, because everyone's heard of it, but no one's read it. And when you read it, it's very clear that the anti-Semitism is simply part of the larger Darwinian framework. And that's undeniable. It's not just about the peculiar anti-Semitism of the Germans of the period, or Adolf Hitler in particular. It's that Darwinism had gripped the European and American intelligentsia. And this, for Hitler and others, was the implication that there were inferior races. But the notion of inferior races and their extinction come right out of Darwin, even though he doesn't associate it with Jews, but with other races.
I was talking to my teenage daughter some time back, and she was telling me about some of the things that her friends say and believe and whatnot. A remarkable number of these kids, you know, like to bandy about the idea that they're atheists, and some of them even know fancier terms like nihilism, and some of them even know Friedrich Nietzsche's name, although I doubt they've read his work. If they were to read it, what would they find there?
That's a wonderful illustration of a point and reason why I wrote this book. You have a kind of popular grasp of a philosophical arguments that if the people actually read them, they would realize how shocking they were. I sincerely doubt that any of them are followers of Friedrich Nietzsche. Now, Nietzsche argued, again, as a follower of Darwin, he actually transformed it, pushed it even further, arguing that that biological superiority includes all aspects of human nature, including intellectual but also physical superiority, and that those who are super, that is, over and above the crowd, should rule everyone else as slaves. Well, I sincerely doubt that these young ladies mean that they want to bring in somebody like a pharaoh who looks around them and from among, you know, all of their friends, chooses those whom he wants as slaves to build his own empire. You know, so they need to read the original, and it might shock them into toying with dangerous, you know, away from toying with dangerous ideas.
One of the books that you include in your list of five that don't help is The Feminine Mystique. What are the dangerous ideas here? Because many people consider that a landmark, a step forward for not only women's rights, but for the broadening of our thinking on all other fronts as well.
Yes, as Betty Friedan's work is characterized by the popular culture and the intelligentsia, just as you stated. And that's why when I did Friedan's work, I made clear the kind of intellectual presuppositions and goals that you don't see popularized. I did the same thing, by the way, with Margaret Sanger, who's a rabid eugenicist and the founder of Planned Parenthood. But Friedan's vision was formed by two aspects. One of them was her own horrible childhood, in which her socialite mother was kept from going outside the house and being a literary writer by her father. And she was a spiteful and nasty woman, made even angrier, and took it out on Betty Friedan's father and on Betty. And so she associated women staying home against their will with this childhood blackness that really was horrible for her. On top of that, she was a Marxist, and she believed that the final stages of the Marxian revolution were being ushered in by the freeing up of richer, that is, suburban housewife, upper-middle-class women, from labor. They were the ones that were now the vanguard of the Marxian revolution, and she was setting all of this in a Marxian framework, but hid that from her readers and pretended that she herself was a housewife who suddenly discovered how miserable she and everyone else was. When in fact that wasn't the case with her life at all. She was a writer from the very beginning, and she had maids to do her work and lived in a very nice house. She was no beleaguered housewife. So, I'm trying to bring out the theoretical foundations that she herself hid, the psychological foundations of her own distaste for motherhood, and finally what it brought her to, which was to attack motherhood at its root, and she became the founder, co-founder of the National Abortion Rights Action League, and almost, you know, without parallel, the person responsible for the millions and millions of babies who have been killed in the name of the freedom of the woman to do whatever she wants.
You said earlier that one of these books ought to be required reading for college lists, secondary education. Shouldn't really all of these be required reading if someone wants to understand not only the times we live in today, but really why, as you said at the very beginning, this is like the atmosphere we breathe. We don't think of these as ideas that can that can be postulated and evaluated and rejected. We just think of them as the way things are.
The way things are, exactly. And that's the reason I wrote the book, is to awaken people so they can have that experience where they can literally walk backwards historically and discover the ideas that in which they are imprisoned. And as you say, see them and then judge them clearly. So yes, they should be read, although there is this danger that, you know, that will cause the original reaction. And so, yes, this is great. You know, I'm now a follower of Machiavelli, so I try to provide a foundation, an interpretive foundation, so that the 10 books that screwed up the world can be a kind of a key or a guide for people in reading these books. So they should read them, but I think that it is wise to have a thoughtful guide, and that's what I hope I've been able to provide in 10 books that screwed up the world.
Dr. Benjamin Weicker is Senior Fellow at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology and the Discovery Institute, author of the new book, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World and 5 Others That Didn't Help. Thank you so much for being our guest.
And I thank you very much for offering.
When we come back from this break, how girls dress, and now we're not talking about full-grown women. We're talking about the girls, too. And it starts very early, and it's very difficult for young men. I don't know if girls realize how difficult it is for young men just to be around young women. And when young women dress the way often young women do, things become much more difficult. We're going to be talking about how girls dress. Rebecca Curtis will be our guest, author of an article in Higher Things magazine titled, Hey, Good Looking. Was she talking to me? I don't know. I don't think I have a problem with the way I dress. It's certainly not designed to attract the opposite sex, at least if my wife is any indication. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will be our guest at the first part of this next hour. We'll talk about a UN resolution that would ban the defamation of religion, and Pastor Peter Bender continues our series on the Apostles' Creed. God the Son, we'll pick up where we left off with him a little later on the program. I'm Todd Wilkins. Stay tuned.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
A lot of us across this country are really thankful to be hearing your voices again.
Dr. Albert Mohler, president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, with his thoughts on the return of Issues Etc.
It's great to be with you guys on Issues Etc. Welcome back. A lot of us across this country are really thankful to be hearing your voices again. It's always great to be with you guys.
We're talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues Etc. Listen live or on demand at www.issuesetc.org.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Robert Michelle Muse, Jan Schrader, Mary Sywell, Scott Dennis, Pastor Mark Payne, Charles Brown, Mike Wierit, Jolene Wierit, Greg Myers, and Ellen Dorinda Winter. Thanks for your support.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
I'm not endorsing any candidate or party, just making an observation about feminists. Gloria Steinem is a hardcore feminist who goes way back, and she has strong words about Sarah Palin, the vice presidential candidate. Steinem calls Governor Palin the wrong woman with the wrong message. She also said Sarah Palin shares nothing but a chromosome with Hillary Clinton and declares the right-wing folks are trying to appease women voters. Wouldn't you think feminists would celebrate such a development? Only if the candidate represents a radical pro-abortion agenda. It's no wonder today's women don't want to be feminists. They're associated with radical, antiquated opinions. Politics aside, I think Sarah Palin is a remarkable individual, regardless of her gender.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.